Welcome to Crosstalk. Thank you so much for joining. I am here today with Matt W., who is an amazing businessman and man in recovery. As a side note, before we begin, please subscribe if you like us. We could really use the support. We are a 501(c), which means we're a nonprofit. We make zero money. However, we would like to one day start giving scholarships to people who need help and raise money for more awareness and recovery and people who need, you know, and can't afford to get help. So if you like it, support us. And if you don't, switch channels and we'll see you soon. Anyway, I'm here with Matt. Thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me on the show.
All right. So let's get started. What we do here on Crosstalk is we kind of go through your story. How did you get here today, sitting at this table? You know, where did you grow up? How did you grow up? What happened? And, you know, what does recovery look like when you got sober? And what does recovery look like now? How has it evolved, kind of thing?
Great. Great. So, well, thank you again for having me on the show. Specifically how I got here, you and I met and connected, I think, a couple years ago, I think through mutual friends. And then, you reached out. And I love this stuff because I think it's so important for people to have that time. And I may reach somebody that may not have ever experienced sobriety or, you know, is thinking about it or is concerned about somebody else, you know, a family friend or a loved one. So I think it's like, you know, that ripple effect is really huge. So if you can help one person. So I love doing podcasts. I love talking about experience, strength, and hope and how it helps people. Originally, I am from, my name is Matt Williams. My sobriety date is May 17th, 2010. Originally grew up. This is weird, right? So much time has passed.
That's so cool.
It's wild. How much
time. I hope to get there.
You will. I mean, that's the thing. It's like,
if you keep doing what you're doing, type
right,
thing.
It just days stack on top of each other. But originally from New York, right outside the city. Had a really great childhood. I'm the youngest of three boys. My parents were incredible, just great people, worked really hard, you know, instilled a work ethic in me as a young man. My two older brothers are a lot older than me, so I was kind of the surprise. They're 11 and 14 years older than me, so I came along and I think
shook up the house
because no one else in my family is like me or struggles with what I struggle with, which is, you know, alcoholism and addiction. My childhood was really basic, right? Like, I really kind of just, you know, did what everybody else did. I grew up in a small town, you know, I had a small graduating class, everyone in my town, I kind of had like a double life, like I don't want to say double life, but I love sports and I love music. I loved kind of doing different things. Cause okay. Like I had probably undiagnosed ADD, ADHD as a kid. I couldn't play sports. I couldn't focus. Like my whole thing was like running around outside in nature and like trying to catch things and, you know, be that outdoor kid in the suburbs of New York. So, you know, I quickly learned like when that kind of changes and you're in school and your friends are playing sports and you kind of have to figure out, all right, what am I going to do?
Right.
And I was always raised in like a musical family. So it was like very big, you know, that I played an instrument, you know, piano lessons as a kid, like those things that
I can relate. I did piano lessons.
Right.
I went for the candy though. She had a big candy jar on her piano. Yeah. And I was like really into the candy more than the piano.
I will never forget. Yeah. Mrs. Rodenberger, she had a piano and I took lessons with her and she always had like cool candies. And like, I think she had like a one of her kids worked in like a huge business and like she always had like great food. So
great.
It was great. My mom would pick me up.
Your piano teacher's better than mine.
She was great. She was great. But it was really important to do a lot of things to find out what you really liked. And that's like what my parents encouraged. And, you know, as time progressed, you know, as you get a little older, it was, you know, I always share that the thrill or the first drink or the first experience related to some form of alcohol, you know, for me, it was about the manipulation and getting away with it. And I didn't learn that until I got sober. Right.
Right.
It was, you know, let's, you know, steal this beer. You know, it was like a hot Sam Adams from like a garage. And like, how do we drink this and like not let anybody find out? And, you know, I grew up.
How old were you?
I want to say we were like probably like 10, 11, you know, and it was just one of those things. It was like I grew up on a dead end road. I had, you know, no joke, I lived next to the Wilsons, no joke. And I had a couple other friends. So, you know, you get home and then, you know, you run around outside. We grew up on like this public golf course. Same. So you could just run around and do whatever you wanted. And it was like truly like the old days, like my mom would call me like dinner.
Yeah.
And we come running home.
Sounds like we grew up around the same like years. We're probably the same age.
Yeah. Probably I'm a little older than you, but like the same thing. You run around, you know, you have fun.
My brother and sister were older and not much older, like 2 years and 5 years. So like I ran around with them.
Are you the youngest?
I am the youngest. Okay. So it's funny, I'm a millennial like first year, but I don't consider myself one because.
What's the cutoff at?
I'm 1982. I'm kind of like the gray year.
Okay. I'm 81. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know. I think that we're both considered millennials, but like, I don't really feel like I'm one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, you start to do those things, you start to get away with things, you learn how to kind of play the system and, you know, get away with stuff. And I didn't realize that at the time, but that felt good. Like if I could paint a picture and be like the nice, you know, kid, you know, Matt Williams and, you know, try to fool the parents and, you know, I'd be okay. And I didn't receive any consequences or anything like that. And it was a typical, you know, cul-de-sacs, basements, that's where people drank, you know, sleepovers as, you know, as you get a little bit older into your teens and you go to your friend's house, you hang out. And then when the parents go to sleep, you sneak their booze and like refill it, you know, like the stupid stuff, like refill it with water. Like the parent, you know, people aren't going to figure it out. And there was nothing really out of the ordinary because everybody was doing it. And for me, it progressed into college. And then I learned about other forms of alcohol, that allowed me to stay up longer and drink more, which I really, really liked. Because like I already have like an engine and it just kind of kept my engine going.
Yeah, I'm that's me too.
Right. And consequences started happening probably like high school, like junior, senior year, nothing crazy. Got to college, found out some more fun ways to consume alcohol. Mm. And, you know, my big thing, and I don't say this as like, I say this to share this, is like I would go places, I would take myself there, and then when I was ready to leave, I left. It didn't matter what condition I was in, and I would drive. And that obviously not recommended.
Unfortunately, same.
Right.
And the fact that I came down here in one piece, well, I was like half a piece, but also I didn't kill anyone. I didn't hurt anyone. Right. That is
a miracle.
I would never do that again, you know?
Or, and I had some friends that, you know, had some experiences where, you know, other people got hurt in their car or there was an accident and, you know, someone passed and like, I mean, it severely wrecked them as a human being.
Right. But that it wasn't, did you know them then? Like,
was something? Yeah. I just remember that, you know, I'd worked with a guy. And again, as I kind of, I want to say grew up, cause I don't think I grew up until I got sober. But as I like got older, I started to meet different people that had some experiences and that, you know, I'd always be like, you know, what's wrong with that dude? And they're like, well, you know, he had this situation back when he was, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he, you know, someone died. And I was like, wow, like I can never imagine what that would be like.
But that didn't stop you from
No, absolutely not. And my consequences just got worse. You know, it was, you know, a ding on a car, you know, driving home one night, literally, I don't know how I went through a windshield, like came to, I was so close to home that my car made it home. And, you know, I remember walking in to, you know, I was living at my parents' house, this like college years. And I was like, hey, I crashed the car. And like, they checked everything. And I remember they called the police to make sure I didn't hit anybody. And I told them I hit a wall that was like right down the street. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do anything because they couldn't prove it. I was home in my house. Like I had glass shards and blood and everything like that.
But
like, they couldn't prove anything.
Right.
So
you were in Westchester. Were you starting to go out in the city? Did you go to school? Like,
yeah, you know, the city, I just like low key stuff. The city and like,
it was too loud.
It was just too much.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot going on and we'd go in when like our friends started to bartend at places that you could, you know, take the train in and take the last train home. Or like once people started moving to the city, we'd go crash at a friend's place. All those things happened. But, you know, my journey was, you know, consequences started coming a little bit more like frequently.
Okay.
And I started to realize that a lot of other people that were my age were, you know, starting to settle down or going to grad school or getting married or having children. And I was like, oh man, that sounds terrible. Like who wants to do that? So I found people that were younger than me that drank like me. You know, I always share that, you know, when I was younger, there was all of these guys that were around that had graduated maybe a year or two that was still kind of around town. And like the girls in our grade would always go hang out with them. And I'm like, why are these guys hanging around? And then I turned into that guy,
yeah.
You know, and I became that guy. And then I, you know, moved to Connecticut, and I would kind of, I call it like that triangle of terror, where I could be home and visit my family, I could go to Stamford, Connecticut, and I can go to the city, and I would just...
Oh my God, bounce. I had a similar triangle of terror. I love. Correct. I never heard that. That's awesome.
And
how old are you around this time? Like,
I'm like mid, young to mid 20s.
Okay.
And you know, I had a couple of DUIs by then, you know, and a lot of the things when you know people, or you know, you're friends with people, you can kind of get away with things. Mm. And that, again, that fueled the, oh, so and so will take care of this. Like, I remember the first major traffic stop that was like non-alcohol related. It's a crazy story for like another time, but the cop that arrested me was the same cop that ended up, like, this is wild. The same cop that ended up being cellmates with Weinstein.
Oh, wow.
Who may or may not have.
Right. We,
like,
don't know.
Crazy stuff. But I remember I got like four tickets in one shot, and I went in front of the judge, and it happened to be a judge of whose kids I had like coached. And he looked at me, he's like, Matt, like, what are you doing here? And he, you know, the cop didn't show up, and he goes, you know, guy basically made it go away.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, just be a little bit more, right, you know, aware. You know, like, it really hurts me to see this. And like, you know, I know you're a good guy, and you just made up, you know, made out, like, made poor decisions. And I walked away with it. So it was like these little like slaps on the wrist, and then they got more serious, and a couple DUIs in. And I thought, like, you know, I never drank all the time, but anytime I drank, you never knew it was going to go a day, a night, a day, 2 days, 3 days. And I would end up in places that I really had no business being in. Mm. You know, I woke up in places where I'm like, I have no idea how I got here. Did I drive here? Did I come with somebody else? Like, I was, right, a blackout drinker.
Right. You know? That's happened to me a couple, right, times.
And I share, like, if we were sitting here and we were drinking, I'd be fine. I could drink to excess and just keep going. But the minute I left this environment and I went out of the environment, it was like blackout. Like, don't remember anything. And there, right, was like periods of that. And then you could talk to your friends. You're like, dude, where'd you go? Where'd you end up? And like,
that's the worst, actually. Those like thoughts of like, what did I do last night?
Right.
Who did I offend? Or, right, you know, who, oh, then the cringe moments where you like may remember like little pieces of something.
Right. Ugh. And then it gets confirmed by your friends, or like, hey man, you disappeared from the bar. And you know, when you're in the city, you can get on the wrong train.
Oh yeah.
Real easy. And there was times where I ended up in different parts of the city, or the outliers of this, or out the towns outside the city, even driving home from bartending. And I used to bartend in the city. I ended up in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Like, and I take the wrong exit and be like, how did I get here?
Right.
You know? And that was just like the worst part about it. But like, it led me. And this is the thing, the two lives. I was a teacher and a coach for years. And then I had an opportunity to come down to Florida, and I came down to Florida. I packed everything in my Jeep and I drove down to Florida. I got this job, moved right off the Ave. But
you're still drinking.
Still drinking.
You didn't, yeah, come down here like, nope, for recovery or anything. Okay. No. You just happened to come down to like the recovery capital of America.
Yeah. I had a friend down here that was sober.
Okay.
That I had driven down. It was one of those things, like, we drove down. I had no idea. He was like, well, you want to take a road trip to Florida? This was a couple of years prior. We got down here and we partied the whole way, or I should say I partied mostly the whole way. I didn't know he was checking into a treatment program. He didn't tell me.
Oh, wow.
And then we got down here, and then I flew home, and I didn't hear from him for almost 9 months to a year. And yeah, I remember I called his parents. I was like, hey, I've been reaching out to him. Is he okay? And they're like, yeah, like when you drove down with him, he actually checked into a program, and he's not allowed to have contact with anybody but us. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize how serious he was, you know, he was an alcoholic and an addict. Like,
yeah,
too bad for him.
Right.
Like,
right.
Type of deal. Like, you know, I had no clue, and he was one of my best friends.
I don't know what that looks like.
Right. But he hit it. So I remember coming down here prior to moving down here. I came down here. I was like, I'm going to go visit him. And like, he doesn't drink, and we're just going to hang out. And I did. And it was great. But upon moving down here, teachers are a fun bunch. They like to have their fun. And I met up with the people that I had just started teaching with. And we were on Atlantic Avenue, and it was just like everybody met up for a drink or two, but I stayed. And the person I was staying with the next morning was like, hey man, you're staying here until you find your own place, but please understand, you can't do what you did last night. And I'm like, well, what did I do last night? He's like, well, I mean, like, you don't understand this area very well. And like, if you go off the wrong streets at the wrong places, you're not going to be found again. And I'm like, okay, buddy, like I lived in DC, I lived in New York, like,
right.
Calm down. But he was very serious. And like, I stayed there for probably a month and a half until I found a place to live. It was closer to my job. It was very great.
What kind of teacher were you?
I was an elementary school teacher.
Oh, wow.
And I coached varsity baseball. And it was great. It was such an amazing opportunity, an amazing school. But being down here, I'm easy to get along with, and I love people. And, you know, I joined like a kickball league, and the best part about kickball is everybody got drunk afterwards at a bar, and, you know, it was new people, and I found like my people.
Yeah.
Right. So it was like Mr. Williams during the day, and then it was, you know, who I was. And like, I wasn't bartending. I tried to do like a restaurant gig while I was here. But when you're kind of like the head bartender or the head server, and like you just have a good crew, and when you start over, you start from the bottom. And I was like, I don't want to do this.
No,
and I was like,
that,
it lasted like 2 weeks, and I was like, this is stupid.
Yeah. I came down here, they're like, you're not going to be a chef anymore. I'm like, thank God.
Yeah. And then, you know, the use kind of, it just became very lonely. And like, you know, that I'm by myself. I don't really want anybody to know what I'm doing. And then, you know, my last drink, I'd learned this when I got sober, but my last drink, I drank at someone because I didn't think they gave me the credit I thought I was entitled to. And it was like,
what do you mean you drank at someone?
I helped out with a school play.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like helping with the lights, and it's like you work with one of the kids and you're just whatever. And I remember at the end of the play, like I remember the person running everything, like thanked everybody. And I didn't hear my name. And I was like, you know,
angry.
Fuck this guy.
Oh, you drank at someone.
You know, I was like, and I remember everybody went out to a party afterwards, and everybody brought something. And what I brought, I ended up consuming by myself, getting in a car, trying to get home and crashing my car on May 15th, 2010.
Wow.
And I learned really quickly. It's a different ballgame when you don't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ended up in the Boca PD, and then they just ship you right up to gun club.
I was going to say you must have ended up in gun club.
Yeah, gun club. I don't recommend it.
Yes, I'll follow your recommendation.
But it was one of these situations where, and I describe this as, it was very humbling, very embarrassing. You get stripped down, you get searched, you get jumpsuited. And it was the first time that whole process, like I'd been in a drunk tank, I'd been on like a bench, like I'd been in like a jail cell, like I had done all those, but it was the jumpsuiting and walking into general population with people that weren't there for drunk driving. They were there for a lot of other like really intense things, or had done some things that were even, you know, more unsavory than what I had done.
Mm.
And I remember kind of like being like, you know, obviously I was so intoxicated, kind of in and out of like my reality and consciousness. And then I remember kind of coming to, and like, you know, when you're somewhere and your eyes are closed and you're like, man, I really hope I'm not where I think I am. And the sounds that I'm hearing, I hope this is a dream. And I remember coming to and being like, wow. And I'm like, orange jumpsuit, you know, snot, tears, you know, just kind of a mess. And I just like sat up and I was like, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. Like, I need help. I'm an alcoholic. And it was the first time I really uttered those words. And I didn't say them to anybody.
Just to yourself.
I was just like sitting there on like the second floor of this huge room with other people. And I remember I like made my way down. I saw some guy that was sitting there, and he kind of like looked like he knew like his way around the place. And, you know, he's a big dude. And I just like went over, he's like, you good? I'm like, not really, I'm here. And I said, what are you here for? He's like, yeah, you know, I got drunk and I almost beat a guy to death. He's like, my mom's picking me up and like, you know, figure it out. And I kind of like looked at him and I was like, I'm 28 at the time. I'm like, how old are you? He was like mid 40s.
Yeah.
And I was like looking at him and I was like, this is, aside from like fighting, I was like, this is me. And he was like, the fact that he answered that his mom was picking him up and he was in his 40s.
That like triggered something. I was like, I do not want to be there.
Right. I was like, no, thank you. I don't want to do this. And I remember just a series of events just kind of unfolded from that conversation to going in front of the judge, to him looking at me. I couldn't even look him in the eye. Like I really struggled looking people in the eye because I didn't want anybody to know who I was. And he, you know, he was leafing through my paperwork from the last 10 years. And he's like, looks like you're going to be a resident here. you know, if something doesn't change, you still might have to be based on what I'm looking at. He's like, but it looks like you've had enough. And I, you know, I was like, yes, sir. You know, I couldn't like talk loud. And I, and he let me go, like release the ROR, or release of your own recognizance. I remember I got out and I called the friend that was sober and I said, hey man, I just got out of gun club. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know what to do. And he was like, no shit.
Wow.
And he's like, what do you want me to do? And I was like, I don't have an answer. I don't know. I was like, call my mom. I was like, no, don't call my mom. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I just wanted to call you because like, you're the only sober person I know. And he's like, all right. He's like, what do you need me to do? And I was like, I'm going to call the girl I'm dating. And I know people are worried because the judge had explained someone tried to like bail me. Like it was like that, like out of a movie, like he's like, someone cares about you. And there's people here that obviously are concerned for your welfare. You might not be,
right.
But it was interesting. I called the girl and I was like, I'm so sorry. And she's obviously hysterical. Didn't cry on, cried all night and was like, I'm on my way to get you. And then I called my oldest brother, Rob, and I was like, hey, I did it again. I'm really sorry. I don't know. And he was just like, what do you need me to do? And I was like, I don't know. I just needed to tell you that I'm an alcoholic. And he's like, let me figure some stuff out and I'll be right down. And these are people that, you know, love me and love me from afar. And obviously had expressed concern before. And I always thought, you know, hey, like, don't tell me how to live. Like I'm a teacher. I have a master's. I'm working hard. I don't ask anybody for anything, you know, like I do me, you know, and it wasn't really how you treat, you know, it's not really how you, I wasn't raised that way. And then I called my other brother and let him know and let him in on the situation. He's like, okay. He's like, Rob will come down. I'll come down. Like, we'll figure it out. And a girl picked me up. We were driving home from gun club and I lived in West Boca. And I remember, you know, I share this not to be dark, but it was one of those moments where I was like, okay, how can I not be here permanently? Because I don't want to face this. I said it and it felt good, but I knew there were so many things that I was going to have to take care of. I knew my accident was really public and everybody knew about it because like it wasn't too, you know, it was a normal time at night, but I had been going hard. And, you know, the thought of not doing something that you enjoy and you love because it doesn't, it's like not working for you anymore. Yeah. It's a really hard thing to overcome. And like the thought of calling my mother, I was like, I just don't want to do this. And I was like, I'd rather be dead. And then I realized I was a giant coward and I was like, how would I do it anyway?
Right. And I've said things like that too. And I said it to my mom once and she just, she told me, I think later on in life, like that was the hardest thing she ever heard, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I remember calling my mom and telling her what happened. And there was like silence. And she was just like, I love you very much. And if you need anything, call your brothers, and hung up the phone.
Wow.
And it was the first time.
Hard love.
And it was the first time she, you know, I put this woman through a lot. You know, my dad had passed, you
know. Was she an enabler?
She wasn't an enabler. She's hard. She grew up on a farm as a kid. Like she had lived a hard life. Like she went through her stuff, but she was an amazing woman. She did an incredible job raising everybody, providing for us. Like
she was
just done with me. And like just said, like, I love you. And if you need anything, call your brothers. Cause she was tired. She was done. And like, it was the first time I was like, wow, my own mother. And I wasn't like in a pity party, but I was like, my own mother is done with my shit.
Right.
You know? And like,
times
have changed. And, you know, it was interesting. The first couple, you know, that was on, I think, you know, I got out, I think on a Sunday, I went in on a Friday night. I got out on a Sunday and I had to show up to work Monday. And I walked onto the school property and it's like, not because of my ego, but I knew everybody was talking about it. It was like, oh, Mr. Williams, you know? And, you know, it was really interesting. A lot changed, in like a short amount of time. A woman, there was a couple families I was closer with and the woman came in and I was there early for, you know, early care. You know, that was like my thing. I get there cause some parents have to drop their kids off. And this woman came in, dropped her kid off. She's like, can I talk to you? I said, sure. Went and sat down and she's like, are you okay? I was like, no. Right. And she's just like, well, what's going on? And I told her, and she kind of just sat there and looked at me. And I was just like, she's like, I know how you feel. I was like, no, you don't. I was like, how would you possibly know how I feel? And she's like, I'm an alcoholic and I'm, you know, X amount of years sober. And I was just like floored.
Wow. Cause
this woman was like Mrs. Mom, PTA, all these events, beautiful home, amazing kids, amazing life. And I was like, there's no chance. And she's like, yeah. And she's like, if you're not going to believe me, but I've been exactly where you are. And I was like, holy shit.
There's hope.
There's hope. But like, I didn't feel it yet. And then she left and she's like, if you need anything, obviously call me. And then another mom came in and she's like, I want you to call my husband. And I was like, absolutely not. Because he was a scary guy. And like, when you work in a private school, like, there are some parents you meet and there's other parents that you don't. They're very successful people that you sometimes deal with, nannies and yeah. other people that kind of work for the family. And anytime this guy came around, if we had like a thing, like where parents had to show up, like he would kind of like look at me and then just be like, Mr. Williams, how you doing? And I'd always be like, wow, this guy.
I'm scared of
yeah,
him.
Yeah, like he looked through me. And she's like, you need to call him. And I was like, no. And she's like, just call him. And I called him and, Mr. Williams, I'm gonna pick you up tonight. Be ready at your apartment. And he took me to a meeting.
Do you still know this man?
Yeah.
And the woman that?
Yeah.
I love that.
And they were very, very important people in the early sobriety in that first like 24 to 72 hours that gave me some hope and gave me some direction. And I remember I went out to a meeting and I sat there and I kind of looked around and I was like, fuck these people, you know? But I sat there and I just kind of, you know, arms folded and I was just like looking around. I was like really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got a nudge and he's just like, tell him who you are. And I was like, no. He's like, you don't have a choice. And I raised my hand. I said I was an alcoholic and I kind of just vomited on the meeting. And I shared about, you know, I lost my job. Pity, blah, blah, blah.
The victim.
And when I popped my head up to look around, everyone was like nodding and smiling. And they were like, and it kind of bothered me. Because I'm like, what are they nodding and smiling about? I just told them I'm like going to go to jail for 1 to 3 years. I lost my job. I have no license. I don't know what's going to happen. And a guy, you know, raised his hand after me. He's like, man, announced his name. And then he's like, I remember when I was like, you're a scared little boy. I was 28 years old and no one had ever said that to me. Someone had called me an alcoholic before. And I was like, what do you know? But it was the first time someone literally like called me out. And then after, you know, kind of hearing everybody's experience and everybody was just sharing their experience, I was like, wow, I was like, these people are like me. These people have been through, and I heard some things where I was like, wow, I was like, I would probably drink if I went through that, you know?
So you went straight to a meeting. There was no rehab, no, you know, okay.
Yeah. So I did.
That's pretty incredible to me when people can do that. I mean, like, although I can't remember crazy cravings, because I like switched to food like very quickly. Like I was like, really ate my feelings for like a good 3 or 4 months and a little longer probably. But I was in a confined environment for quite a while, for 3.5 months. For 2 months I was in a bubble, right? Then I moved up to sober living. And you know, that's to be out in the open, able to go to a liquor store at any time, able to go walk into a bar, who's watching, you're an adult. I don't know if I could have done that on my own.
So I did I participated in about a month of fellowship. And then, you know, I thought I was going to get fired, but they're like, we can't fire you. We can't replace you. You already didn't resign your contract. And that was the other thing. I didn't resign because I wanted to go back up north. I wanted to go back to my triangle of terror and be in my element.
Where they know you.
Where they know me. And about a month, my kids graduate school, summer vacation. And I checked into a treatment program. And, you know, I had interviewed a couple because, of course, that's what we do. And I ended up going to a place that no longer exists, but it was really, really great for me because the gentleman who I called, who I knew that was sober from my childhood, was a therapist and leaving there to go somewhere else. And he's like, I don't want you to be in the same place I work. He's like, but where I'm leaving, I think is a good fit for you. And I went and I saw it and I had nothing and he got me in. And his words to me, he's like, you're not here to make friends. You're not here to meet women. If at any point in time you want to drink, walk out the door because I put my name out there for you. And he's like, and be honest.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, sure.
Amazing.
And
what
I remember.
An incredible person.
And I was like, I'm going to do 30 days. And it was tough. There was a lot of things I hadn't really dealt with. You know, I needed a little bit more extracurricular help and working with a therapist and working with a team of people, processing a lot of trauma that I, you know, with my dad passing and some other friends that had passed tragically that I just kind of stuffed down. But the best part about saying I was an alcoholic is that like, it just like felt lighter and lighter and lighter. Right. And I was like, oh man, I can finally be honest. Like what's on my heart and what's in my head is coming out. And I was sharing all the things and things that I had done and things I had been a part of. And then I learned about, you know, the kind of the meat and potatoes of everything of the fellowship, and was like, they're like, they suggested I do this. And I did what anybody, you know, if you suggested I do that or stand on my head and spit quarters, like I did whatever you told me to do, because I knew the way I was living was not working. So I will do whatever you tell me to. Mm. And I was not very popular treatment. Like if you weren't there to do the deal, I was like, just don't talk to me.
Right.
Like people were acting out, and like anybody in early recovery, it's just, they act out, like the cloud kind of lifts.
Yeah.
And like, I got this. I watched people come and go. I watched people leave and die. I watched.
Oh, me too.
So many like strike, but... like I watched strike threes happen where people like, knew that if they messed up or left or did anything, they were going to prison, and they did. And I was like,
that's crazy to me too.
And I'm like, what? You know, and I'm just here. I was like, I don't want to go to prison. And I was like scared, and, you know, got through all the legal stuff, got my sentencing, and I just followed the directions. You know, I ended up doing 90, staying there. And then when I moved out, I moved back to my apartment. Because I didn't have any money. I had like a very basic job. I was working in a kitchen, mm-hmm. you know, I was making food, mm-hmm. And I had no car. I had no license. I biked everywhere. Public transportation in Florida is not fun.
No, that's the only thing, you know, how you said stand on your head and whatever quarter.
Spit quarters.
I did almost everything they asked me to do, except I got my car back. They were against me getting my car back.
Right.
And I was like, I was on job search. I'd waited for the bus for 2.5 hours and I thought I was going to die of like heat exhaustion.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, you know, that's the one thing, like I'm just not going to walk everywhere. And the buses are not, I'm happy to take public transportation, but where is it?
Right.
I'm a New Yorker. Like,
yeah,
I'll wait for a train. I've waited half an hour for a train. You know, the Eve train just doesn't want to run sometimes. I've done that, but it comes and I'm not waiting in the 100-degree, you know.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have that option. And I love to say I got sober before Uber, because Uber wasn't a thing. And I had to either call people.
I don't know.
And I had to ask people for help. Mm. I had to figure it out. If I, you know, there's sometimes I biked and I had to get on a bus and there were too many bikes. I had to chain my bike and figure out how to get it back another time.
Right.
But I would run, walk, bike, whatever, ask for anything to get to, you know, the fellowship, to get to a job, to get to wherever. And it was really a valuable learning lesson. You know, I was becoming aware. I was learning some things about interactions with my families and how to handle them more appropriately.
What I call boundaries.
Boundaries. Yeah. The girl I was dating, you know, I told her to run the other way and she stuck around and she kind of was like, you know, like, hey, at first she was like, you know, DUI, like she had a brother and like, yeah, he had a DUI. And everybody's approach to it at the beginning was like, even the headmaster at my school, he had sons and he's like, you know, Mr. Williams, it's, you know, I was like, no, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And like, I hate saying that to you as my employer, but I just have to be honest. Like, I don't do that like everybody else. I'm not able to drink successfully. Mm. And as the more honest I got, and you know, I've been accused of being intense, the more intense I got about my program and about following the suggestions, life got better. And the boundaries I created and the awareness I had of who I was, and like, I wouldn't just go along and people please, and not, I wasn't trying to intentionally be rude or a dick or anything like that. I just was like, this isn't for me. I'm not going to do that. This works. I don't feel right about this. I was communicating. I learned how to communicate with people. And you know, a couple little jobs here and there. And I was very fortunate, you know, a family friend of my wife had an opportunity. I started working there. And from working there, I was sitting, you know.
Is your wife the girlfriend who stuck around?
She's now my wife. She married me.
Oh my God. So she was the one that you went to gun club. She was one crying. And
Chelsea,
I was going to ask you. I didn't know Jessica. Okay.
Yeah, Chelsea. Sorry.
Chelsea. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
It's okay. And so it went from.
Amazing. I love her.
Yeah, doing these little jobs. And she would come to meetings to learn, open meetings to learn about it, mm-hmm. because she didn't understand. and very supportive. And I couldn't.
It's so important. I couldn't paint a
better situation, and having a partner in life that, you know, supported me and walked through the worst part of my life. Cause like her and I partied a little bit, but she never like saw me really unleash. Mm-hmm. Thank God. But
especially as a blackout drunk, you don't know how it's going to go. I mean,
yeah,
I don't see you as like a violent person, no. But
I was sometimes very just like yeah, whatever, you know,
but sometimes like, there's things you can do and damage without being violent, you know?
Yeah. And that was, I'm just so grateful for that, but it led me to working for this family. And while I was there, I would have stuff to do. And then when I didn't, they just said, hey, you know, kind of just sit there until we need you. And that's when
So you were working as like whatever they needed.
Yeah. I worked to kind of assisting the sales department and this like family business.
Okay. In the business, not like at home.
Nope. Okay. And during that time,
what kind of business was it?
They outfitted these, like they would build these mainframes. So like, let's just say this apartment complex was all on the same, like had the same service for like TV or whatever. And then they had the contract.
Right.
And then they had the contract with Samsung. So every apartment or every place had a Samsung. And then there was like a mainframe that controlled everything. It was kind of like they did hotels.
Maybe we use them.
Who knows? But they were very successful and they were very kind to me. And that time is when there was nothing to do and I wasn't able, and they didn't need me. I was sitting there and I was like very into working out and always have been, even during my addiction. I started like, you know, kind of figuring out, I was like, all right, I need to eat stuff. And like, you know, I cooked a little bit in early recovery and that didn't work out. And I just kind of went home and I started making these like little like peanut butter treats for myself because I was biking everywhere. And like when you bike, like you had your car, but when you bike in Florida, you have to, in a backpack, you have to have a towel, you have to have shorts because it's going to rain and then stop. And you had to change your clothes and you couldn't like pack a sandwich in the heat. So I just made these little bars, and anywhere I went from the office or to go, there's a couple families that knew my situation. I would go tutor their kids or train them at the, you know, the neighborhood gyms here.
Yeah. You'd eat a bar.
I would just have a bar.
Well, I've had your bars and they are freaking delicious. I'll tell you my favorite flavors later.
Okay.
But I get them at like Casamana Bliss, my yoga place. Yep. I get them at like Whole Foods, you know, they're so good. And I was so impressed actually when I was in early recovery, someone was like, yeah, this guy makes these bars and he's actually in recovery too. And I was like thinking, cause I used to do catering and stuff, and I actually made dog treats for a while and they did really well. My mom has a store, but it was exhausting. And I was like, oh, I don't know, but I would love to meet him. Cause like, I want to do that again and dog treats and all that. But I never obviously did, but your bars Fro-Pro are delicious.
Thank you.
Oh my God. They're so good. And I love them.
Thank you. Yeah. So
it's incredible. So you started making them in early recovery, and it wasn't really for money. You were doing it for yourself.
Yeah. I was doing it for myself. And
then I know this podcast is about recovery. However, can we take two minutes?
Sure.
Because it's still about like becoming a success in recovery and how does it evolve? Right.
Yeah.
So how did everything like, including your recovery and working hard, but like, how did that evolve too?
So I'll try to condense this. So
yeah,
from that idea, one of the kids I was tutoring was like, hey, I want to try that. And I'm like, you know, as a teacher, allergies, whatever, I said, ask your mom. I don't know, you know, can't trust a kid if they can eat something. God forbid something happens, it's peanut butter. And like, you
seriously.
Know, kids with peanut butter allergies have to sit across, you know, whatever.
Apparently so there's some schools that you can't even bring the
meat. No, yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Anyway.
And so I brought it to her and she's like, oh yeah, she can have it. And she was eating it. She said, is that healthy? And I said, yeah. And she says, how do you make it? And I just like went into her kitchen and I was like, and I just like whipped them up and I said, here you go. And she's like, these are incredible. What do you call it? I was like, nothing. I was like, I just make it for me. And she's like, you know, and I left and I came back, you know, I tutored and trained 2 days a week and I came back. She said, these are really good. I think you have something here. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't know what you mean. And she's like, well, what do you call it? I'm like, I don't have a name for it. I put it in this. It's frozen. It's frozen protein, Fro-Pro. And she literally like took my credit card. And I was like, I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, and she like bought these like 10 website domains. And she's like, great. Like go start a business. And I'm still like,
what are you talking about? Did she buy Fro-Pro.com?
I bought gofropro.com.
Because Fropro, so six-letter domains are actually favored by Google. Side note.
Took 10 years to get Fropro.com.
Wow.
We finally got it.
That's amazing. But that's a really, really...
Yeah, it was great, you know? And so from there, I just, you know, I was training at a friend's gym. I was teaching classes. I had gotten a job in recovery in the treatment center I had worked at. So I was
doing... And you're still going to your fellowship?
Still doing my fellowship, going to meetings every day. I was, you know, it was like 7 days a week.
Amazing.
365.
So you're very dedicated to doing
that. I'm very routine, very consistent once I'm in it.
Yeah.
You know, and like I'm not saying I'm perfect. Like I'll miss things here and there, but like
in
early,
flows, right?
Yeah, early sobriety, I was like, I have to do this and I get to do this. So I'm going to do it.
Right.
And so I was working at a gym and they were the ones that allowed me to first put the product just out. And I didn't want anybody to know it was mine because I didn't want anybody to be like, oh, you know,
can I get one for free?
Not for free, but I just didn't want anybody to be like, oh, let's be nice to the sober kid. Like he's starting over. Like, let's pretend we like
you
it.
You didn't want any pity.
Right. So everybody would try and I see people eating it and they're like, good. And no one knows it's mine. And like some time went by in one class, this gal was asking the owners like, what's in that? And they're like, it's right here on the thing. And she's asking questions. And then they looked at me and I was like, yeah, it's fine. And I talked to her. She's like, hey, I want to eat this, but I'm vegetarian and vegan. And at the time I was making them with like whey, dairy based protein and basic stuff. And she said, you should probably think about doing it like this because more people can eat this product. There's no dairy in it.
Amazing.
And I said, okay. And she's like, why don't you try it out? And I was like, cool. And I went and I changed it up a little bit. So it was plant-based and I brought it to her and she's like, these are great. Can you make me 100? And I was like, no. I was like, I can make 10. And she's like, I'll tell you what, make me 100, figure it out. And when you do, call me. And so I remember I went home and I was like, Chelsea, this gal wants me to make 100. I'm like, what? She's like, okay, well, just do 10 at a time.
Yeah.
And I wrapped them in this like Glad press and seal. Yeah, printed out stickers, amazing. Stickers. And then like, I called her, I was like, hey, I have 100. She's like, cool, come by my store. And I was like, okay. And like got dropped off there and like walked in with like, I had friends that were lawyers who gave me like this like crazy contract. And I like walked in and I was just like, here. And she's like, what's that? And I was like, oh, my lawyers. And she's like, stop. And yeah. I was like, I'm sorry, I don't know. I was just told to do this. And she's like, throw that away. She's like, how much did it cost you to produce all that? I was like, I don't know. You told me to make 100, so I did. And she said, okay, I tell you what. I'm going to take these 100. When I sell them, I'll pay you this. And I was like, okay. And I just wanted to get out of there because I was super uncomfortable and I didn't know. And I was like, holy, you know, I just gave her 100 bars. Like, that was so cool. But like, not paid, no nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
3 days later, she called me. She's like, hey, I need another 100. I sold them. And she goes, I have a check here for you. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So went back, brought her another 100, picked up a check. And I was like, that was cool. And then she's like, hey, my friend tried these. She has a place in Delray that's a juice spot. Why don't you go talk to her? I was like, okay. Called her. I was like, hey, I'm so-and-so's friend. Oh, yeah, you make the bars. Yeah, I'll take 25. And I was like, okay. And again, I didn't start anything to be a business. And it sounds so silly and stupid, but like I have no clue what I'm doing.
Right.
Like then I had no clue. And fast forward, just because like, again, want to get to whatever, but it went from an idea in 11 to a business in 2013 to my wife coming on board in 2016 because she had been running a business and knew the stuff that I don't like to do or like I'm very good at. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, renting space out in West Boca. Then we went to Boynton. And then in 2018, we opened our headquarters, which is on Clintmore Road in, you know, a 2,500 square foot unit that was an abandoned gym. And we built the kitchen out, had office. We were there for a little bit.
And the gym, right?
Right. You know, the awesome. Gym, everything. And it was kind of like our thing.
Yeah.
And then we knocked the wall down in 2021. Now we have two spaces. And then we invested in equipment and this and that. And now today it's...
Yeah, I saw a picture once that you have like a, you know, what they put donuts on. Like a
conveyor belt.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we have a giant kitchen.
And I'm like, look at this. This is serious.
It's pretty cool.
I love it.
When you come do my podcast, you'll get to see it. So yeah, it's really great. I mean...
Wake Up the Sun, it's called,
right? Wake Up the Sun.
How cool.
And it's really great. My wife's the CEO. We have an amazing team that is heavily involved in our mission, what we're trying to do. Like at first it was like, you know, we're just a snack bar, and now we're just more than just a snack bar. We started a nonprofit. We give back to the community.
I heard, yeah, you know, the Fro-Pro Foundation.
Yeah. We hire, we try to hire people in early sobriety to give them a place to go that is
safe,
a safe and legitimate business.
I love that.
That's not
a call center.
Ripping people off.
Mm-hmm. I worked for one of those for like a month, and then I called my current boss and life friend and the one who sent me to treatment. And I was like, if I work here for any longer, my soul has already been ripped out and like sold to the devil. I cannot do this.
Yeah.
I made a lot of money because I'm really good at sales. But I was like, this is not for me. You know, I'd rather not make money.
Right. And that was it, you know, between training clients. And I think a lot of it has to do with like doing the same thing, just like when you get sober, consistently day in and day out to be successful, right? And everybody has their own definition of success, but I really like, you know, I don't get the Sunday scaries anymore. You know, I love teaching and I loved all that. I get to kind of do that at the gym. Mm-hmm. I get to work with people in recovery.
Also do some coaching and like case management, things like that, which I think is awesome. So, I mean, really what I hear about is like, you were being very consistent then, and it sounds like you still kind of do the same stuff now.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And again, not perfectly. There are days where it's like, I'm like, F this, I don't want to do it.
Right.
Not because like I dislike it, but because I might be a little off spiritually or emotionally. It's like, you know, some days when you just kind of want to pick a fight or stir the pot, and it's like, what am I doing? Like, why do I feel like that? And then it's like taking a look at myself, right? You know, maybe I didn't get the thing that I wanted, right? You know, the fear sets in, right? And I think, you know, it's like you've been around long enough to where it's like you see people that takes them back out and they don't come back and they're gone permanently. And I truly do. Like, I love my life. I love being sober. I love the opportunities it's afforded me. And I know it's all about giving back and being involved. And I still go to my meetings and I still attend events and I still show up for other people. And that's what they told me to do.
And I have a question. I think like a big role of why I stay sober, still sober, and really like really second think it if I ever think that I want to drink or anything like that. Like, I'm like, I worked so hard to get to where I am.
Yeah.
And I may have gotten my car back, but do you think that like biking everywhere, working hard, sweating, you know, putting your back into it. Do you think that is also one of the reasons why like you're like, F that, I'm like gonna do everything I can to keep what I have today?
I'm really grateful for that time. Obviously in it, there were moments of like, this sucks.
Exhaustion.
You know, like the bus wouldn't come, I'm late to work, you know.
People would give up.
Yeah.
I've watched people give up.
Right.
You know?
And I think that was one of the strongest things and why is like being able to put that effort in day in and day out, like getting up even earlier to make sure I get the bus to teach the 5:30, like showing up for people, figuring out how to show up early, how to stay late, how to give 100% to what I'm doing, because what's the point if I'm not,
right?
And I learned that in recovery. It was like, are you willing to go to any lengths? And and I still am. You know, I very much remember my last drink. Like, obviously, I was very heavily intoxicated, but I remember the experience and the humiliation and the shame and the darkness and the thoughts and the things that are still like, I'm scared of them.
Yeah.
And like today it's, you know, I heard people say this in earlier sobriety, like, today it's not about the drink or the drug for me. It's about like my emotional sobriety, mm-hmm. right? And like, how am I gonna show up as a husband? How am I gonna show up as a business partner, as a founder, as a sponsee, as a sponsor, as a friend, as a this, whatever? How am I gonna show up? You know, and I have off days. Like, I've had moments where I wasn't being spiritually fit, not acting out to hurt anybody, but just sitting in my own shit and my own pity. And just, you know, what's hard sometimes is when you're so regimented and you have a moment, a human moment, and you typically don't, is it's not received well.
Yeah.
And that sometimes I get really kind of bothered by, because it's like, I'm human, and I'm not asking you to cut me some slack. I'm just saying I'm going to mess up from time to time, and I will own it if I end up somehow hurting you or whatever, yeah. Or, you know, doing something that might not be my 99% of my behavior. But it's work, right? Anything worth doing is worth doing well and doing to, you know, 100% of your effort. And those are things I heard when I got here. Yeah. You know, I was told I was in the effort business. I love that. And I was told early on by someone that was a mentor to me, was like, if you want this community, if you want that, because I said, well, you know, why don't we do that? And he was, you know, four kids and busy. And he's like, if you want that, go build it. Because he had it.
Right.
He goes, I had to build it.
Yeah.
He goes, you can't just get that. You have to work at it.
Right.
And I was like, done. I'm in.
Yeah.
100%.
I love that. You do. You have to work for it. People think it's easy, but, you know, the hardest thing for me was, like, I guess patience. Like, I wanted everything really fast, but
right.
It's worth the wait, kind of thing. It's like the journey has been great and exhausting and, you know, awesome and tearful, you know, like there's a million ands to that, right? Because we have to work through all that pain to get to like the happy spot, yeah. I guess, or the mostly happy spot.
And I think what's really cool too is that a lot of people that I knew when I had my bottom, you know, I remember some people, you know, kind of like they're mean. You know, some of the parents, some of the people that may or may not have understood it and really kind of kicked me when I was down, which they were entitled to, because if you don't understand addiction and alcoholism, it's easy to be like, why can't you just stop? Why did you do that?
I mean, it says it in the literature, like literally people will say like, oh, but she's such a good girl.
Frothy,
like,
emotional.
Why don't you do it for her, you know?
And what's great is like that ripple effect, right? Because since getting sober and being around for 14 and change, some of those people, some of those family members, kids have crossed into the struggle.
Yeah. They crossed what I call the invisible line of one day, like the regular drinking and the regular Irene stopped, and I crossed an invisible line, and it was very dark.
Yeah.
It got cloudy real quick.
And I think what's great about that is because that ripple effect, like if I hadn't gotten sober, I wouldn't be able to help that person regardless of how they treated me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I think is really cool, because you never know who you're going to help. You never know how you act just in general in normal life, how that could be like, man, this guy or gal is on fire for life. What are they doing?
Yeah.
Why are they different? What's the deal with them? You know, and that being a source of like, oh, well, yeah, I mean, he or she's sober. But what does that mean?
Right.
You know, what did they do?
Yeah.
And then people ask questions. And I've had friends, you know, from college. I have friends from childhood. Like, we had some really cool moments where I ran into people and they're like, dude, I thought you died. I thought you were in jail. And like, I'm like, well, I'm not, thankfully. but like, what's up? How can I be of service?
Right.
It's a really cool feeling. And it's like, I'm a true alcoholic and addict someone. And I want to feel good. And I was like, man, I can actually help this person or help this family member who's trying to help that person. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Me too.
And I think it's such a great responsibility that, you know, if you stick around long enough and you act accordingly and you live your life by those set of principles, which, like I said, I'm very intense about, like, integrity is a big deal with me.
I'm with you.
And how you operate on the day to day and how you treat people and how you show up is a very big deal, regardless of, you know, what's going on in your life.
Yeah. So one piece that we didn't talk much about, which mm-hmm. I'm curious because everyone does, some people have it, some people don't, but do you have a spiritual program?
Yeah. No, I mean, I have.
I mean, I know that's part of it, but has that grown? Like, what did that look like? Did you have a problem believing in power? They say power greater than yourself. I personally say God. I'm mm-hmm. not religious. I'm not a church goer, but I do say God because it kind of rolls off my tongue and it's yeah. easy. In the beginning, I was like, I'm going to say spirit of the universe. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say the great, you know, creator of all that is. Like mm-hmm. I say it sometimes, but a lot of times I will say God. And so I'm just curious, like, what does yeah. that look like for you?
Yeah. God, universe, you know, so, like,
it's all the same.
It's all the same. Right. And I think what's great about when you, you know, there's a lot of ways to get sober. Right. And I think the success I have is from, you know, when I first got to this fellowship, I believed in the people that were there because they weren't drinking. Mm-hmm. I had a big problem. I was very angry, AKA scared because, you know, I lost my dad and I was very angry and scared. Mm-hmm. And I had to work through a lot of that and I had to figure out what was right for me and what it meant to me. And it's evolved since then, but I still mm-hmm. believe in the fellowship. I still believe that people that, you know, have been around for a long time.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I believe that people's lives can change. Like when you see the light go on for someone and they're like, oh,
it's
they're,
so cool.
And they're starting to like get it. But yeah, it's changed. Like I was taught to in the very beginning, like the same routine I was taught when I got there, it was wake up, you know, hit your knees and, you know, say, you know, even if it's like, thank you for another day, mm-hmm. you know, and it's got, you know, it's gotten a little bit longer, you know, some days are quicker than others. I use a kind of a 366 day, you know, they have the one day for leap year, but like,
yeah.
I use a meditation and, like a journal. And I was given a journal, like wasn't given a journal when I went to treatment, but when I had checked, when I had gotten out of my situation and I went back to teach that day, there was like a day, it was one of those days. Remember back in the day where you had to put your folders up and like take yeah. tests in school and my
yeah.
kids had to do that. And I remember sitting there feeling like such a phony and a fake. And I remember I just started writing in one of those like five subject spiral yeah. notebooks, my feelings. And I was like, oh, this is great. And I still have it. And I still journal every single day about how I feel, where I'm at. And then I read a reflection. I respond to that. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's like when you read something and there's times like, man, I don't remember reading this.
But yeah, I
clearly have underlined it. And like, it comes, you know, you read the same thing for 14 plus years. Sometimes you're like, oh, this is one of my favorites. Or, man, I don't remember this.
Right.
You know, like one of those things.
Yeah.
Is
it called 24 hours a day? Like that?
I just do the reflection.
Okay.
The daily reflections.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I do some breathing. I like to move. So I used to, I definitely like to go get a sweat, whether it's a walk, a run, going to the gym, working out with my buddies. And then I'll
you have a great system. You have a lot of good fellowship going at your gym.
Yep.
I know a lot of people who go there in early recovery, who continue to go there mm-hmm. and who love it.
Yeah. And then I usually, you know, we'll hit a fellowship meeting and do my thing. I like it in the morning because it, you know, kind of sets me straight and it mm-hmm. like makes me think and makes me aware and kind of focuses, you know, what's truly important. You
amazing. Yeah. But what else would you say? I mean, we can wrap up here now, but is there anything that, you know, you would say or haven't said or give a message to people who may be listening or a family member who may be listening who wants to help someone?
I think it's a, you know, you hear it a lot, it's like okay to not be okay, and if you're not, talk about it. You know, no one's perfect, everybody has their stuff, find the right person to talk to about it. You know,
yeah,
sometimes friends that maybe your best friends may not understand, so talking to a professional about it.
Mm-hmm.
Today, if I didn't, how can I do it better tomorrow? I'm never like, oh, I never put myself down. You know, I learned that in the process. Like, it's like, you know, I got a lot of things I need to work on, and there's actually.
actually some things I do really well.
Yeah, I always tell people, like, highlight what you did right for the day.
Look at that inventory of yourself as a business. Like, what am I good at? What do I excel at? What needs work? And what do I need to
do?
So I think that's really important for a lot of people to remember, and that, you know, like, we get really lost in the sauce where, you know, like, things get better and,
yeah,
you know, the things start coming back that, you know, we may have lost, and we might think, hey, I got this, and, you know, famous last words.
Yeah.
I really do believe it's like, if you can see, if, you know, I interviewed this lady, and it was basically this doctor, and she said, like, I do small things. I celebrate these and do small goals and wins, and if you do them enough consistently, it stacks up, and then you're like, oh, right.
Right.
And I think if you have walked through a bottom emotionally, physically, spiritually, any of those words, I think you can truly do anything you want. You can go anywhere you want, and you can get shit done.
Yeah, you just have to put in the work. It's like those make money quick schemes. Like, there's no make money quick. Like,
you might make money quick, but, like, how many people do we know that have made money quick that are no longer here permanently and or struggling and or
lose money quick? Yeah, exactly. I'm so happy. Thank you so much. And I ask everyone one question. So if you can go back in time travel, and ask young Matt, or a younger version of yourself, so you could be 30 or you could be 12, right? What would you say, how old would you be? What version of Matt would you talk to?
That's a good question. I would probably say, don't care about other people's opinion of you so much. I would probably tell myself that at the age of 13.
I love that. That's like, and that's what my dad taught me in high school. He goes, people are going to talk shit. You know? He's like, whether you're good or bad, no matter what. And the people who want to talk shit will find something to say. Like, they'll make it up if they want to. So just you do you kind of thing. And I was like, a Greek old man, you know what you're talking about. it's a great thing to know. And thank you so much for being here. Are you open to a hug?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking. All right.